For the longest time, if you looked at the academic field of project studies, the discipline trying to figure out how big, complex projects work was all very practical.
Very mechanical almost.
Exactly. It was all driven by this one question: how do we make this more efficient?
How do we optimize the timeline, the budget, the resources?
But in the last couple of decades, something really fundamental has changed. Project studies has.
Well, it's evolved.
It has. It's become a much more academically rigorous field, pulling in ideas from sociology, from organization theory. It's much more diverse.
And today we are diving deep into a really fascinating argument about what this evolution actually enables.
Right.
We're looking at a crucial paper from the International Journal of Project Management, and it argues that this new intellectual sophistication has to be used to build a real bridge.
A two-way bridge.
That's the mission for this deep dive.
Yeah.
We're going to examine how this academic rigor can strengthen the study of what's called temporary organizing, the core idea behind any project, and critically, how that theory can be used as a true two-way intellectual exchange. The authors call it cross-fertilization.
An exchange between the huge field of organization studies and project studies.
Yeah.
So we'll explore two approaches. On one side, you have the top-down way, borrowing established theories from other fields.
And on the other, the bottom-up approach,
Yeah.
developing totally new homegrown theories from project work itself. Theories that could actually inform the bigger fields.
But before we even get there, the paper argues we need to make a critical conceptual shift.
We do. To even have this conversation, you have to move past just talking out the temporary organization with a capital O and start focusing on temporary organizing.
Okay, what's the difference there? Organization versus organizing.
Think of it like this. The temporary organization is the finished product. It's the static form. It's the building after the ribbon has been cut. It's defined by its end date.
Right.
But temporary organizing, that's the process. It's the scaffolding, the blueprints that are changing every single day, the flow of work.
It's the messy reality.
It's the messy reality. It's the dynamics, the practices, the actual doing that happens in that temporary setting.
So it's the difference between looking at the finished stadium and, say, watching the construction workers coordinate and argue and adapt on the ground.
Exactly. And projects are, they're probably the most widespread form of this kind of organizing that we have. But if we can get the theory right for the process, those insights become useful far beyond just project management.
Now, before we get to this exciting two-way street, we have to acknowledge the one-way road that got us here. Organization theory wasn't always a part of project management. That connection really it really solidified with that seminal work by London and Soderholm back in 1995.
That was the paper that really kicked it all off.
Yeah, they basically gave project scholars a solid conceptual base. They framed projects as these social systems that are operating under a really tight, finite deadline. And that framing gave us the classic model for temporary organizations, the four
The
T's.
four T's: time, task, team, and transition.
And when you combine those four elements, they create these unique tensions that really they define what project work feels like.
They do. And if you connect this to the bigger picture, the four T's explain why running a project feels so fundamentally different from, working in a permanent bureaucracy.
Let's start with time.
Okay, so time. Time is the critical dimension. The defining feature is what the academics call the a priori defined institutionalized termination.
Which is a fancy way of saying.
It has a planned, mandated end date, and that end date changes everything.
Right.
And while early studies just looked at linear clock time, the deadline scholars now talk about three different temporal lenses.
Okay.
Time is a scarce resource. We're running out. Time is a fixed structure, the calendar, the milestones, and time is a processual flow, the rhythm and sequence of the work itself.
And that pressure, that finite time, it leads you straight into the next T, which is task.
The raison d'être.
The whole reason the organization exists in the first place. And by definition, these tasks are often really unique, non-routine, and frankly, way more complex than what a permanent organization does day to day.
And that complexity creates all this tension. I mean, think about a massive digital transformation project inside an established bank.
Okay.
That temporary project team has to deal with unique task tensions that the bank itself just food. It doesn't face in its normal work. Intense data security mandates, privacy
The
regulations,
system integration headaches.
all of it. The project's task has to be constantly negotiated with the permanent organization's routine tasks.
And that task leads right into team. Because the work is complex and the time is short, the team is always made up of these interdependent actors pulled from all over.
Diverse backgrounds, different departments, sometimes completely different companies. You're basically throwing strangers together for a sprint.
And building a real team identity isn't automatic when everyone knows the clock is ticking. The source material uses a great phrase for how they cope with this.
It does.
They rely on substitute measures for temporary work identity.
Which is, it sounds very academic, but what does that actually look like for you in practice?
It's the high-intensity kickoff meetings, right?
It is. It's giving the project team a temporary logo, a slogan. It's that immediate, intense focus on a shared mission, on rituals.
Anything to generate trust and cohesion really, really quickly.
Because you don't have years of water cooler chat to build those relationships. You have to simulate the bonding of a permanent team in just a few weeks.
And the last T is transition. It's the change, the shift between the before and the after of the project.
So it covers the actual outcome, like a new IT system, but it's also about perception. How is the work, the success or failure, perceived by the team and everyone else?
Did we just disband or did we successfully hand off the baton?
Exactly. So we have this solid 4T foundation built mostly by applying organization theory to projects. But here's the critical pivot point of the whole paper.
The one-way street problem.
The intellectual relationship has been largely one-way. We've used organization theory to enrich project studies. The challenge now is achieving true cross-fertilization.
So, getting those project-based insights to flow back and actually inform general organizational theory, challenging how we think about those permanent organizations.
And that's where that spectrum comes in, the top-down and the bottom-up approaches.
But isn't there a risk, though? When project studies just borrows from these huge fields like organization theory, doesn't it just end up importing complexity and jargon without really gaining any clarity?
That is precisely the risk. And it's why the source material really emphasizes the need for a stringent application. You can't just borrow buzzwords.
So the first part of the solution is that top-down approach.
Right. Leveraging established, sophisticated theories from organization studies and using them to rigorously analyze what's happening in temporary organizing.
So let's look at a powerful example of this, an organizational theory called practice-driven institutionalism, or PDI.
Okay, that's a bit of a mouthful.
It is. But let's break it down simply. PDI tries to merge two really influential academic approaches, practice theory and neo-institutionalism.
And its purpose is basically to use the strengths of one theory to compensate for the weaknesses of the other. It gives us a really robust lens to see how things actually change.
Okay, so we should probably break down those components for the listener. What is an institutional logic and what exactly is a practice?
So think of institutional logics as the implicit rules of the game for an entire field, like healthcare or finance. They're the big overarching belief systems, the values, the assumptions that guide how everyone behaves.
Okay, so an example.
A hospital might be guided by two competing logics. The professional logic, which is all about the best possible patient care, a doctor's autonomy. Okay. And then there's the market logic, which is about efficiency and cost reduction.
And those are often in conflict.
Constantly. And practice, on the other hand, is the actual doing. It's the routine activity, the specific interaction. It's how people fill out the forms or conduct the meetings.
So PDI connects the big abstract rules of the game, the logics, down to the micro level of how the game is actually played, the practices.
Yes, and here is where it gets so interesting for project studies. PDI argues that the everyday work of practitioners on the ground is the engine room of social order.
The engine room.
The project managers, the team members, through their daily practices, they are the driving force. So that means your small, temporary project team isn't just following rules from on high.
They're actually enacting them or resisting them.
They're enacting these massive institutional pressures.
Wow, that's a powerful idea. It kind of elevates the day-to-day choices someone makes in a meeting to a force that could potentially shape the entire institution.
Absolutely. And PDI is ideal for temporary organizing because projects are so often set up right where those competing institutional pressures collide.
So back to the hospital example.
Take the hospital example. A project to implement new surgical robotics might be constantly pulled between that professional logic, which demands, you know, specialized, lengthy training with no thought to cost, and the market logic, which says this new tech has to be rolled out quickly to justify the massive investment.
And PDI would study how those tensions are brought to life through the project's practices.
Precisely. Do they prioritize detailed training, which follows the professional logic, or do they push for rapid deployment, which follows the market logic?
and the choices they make during the project, the practices they develop, those actions don't just solve the project's problem, they can actually transform or reproduce the institutional logics for the whole field.
Exactly. The source gives this really concrete example of a study of an IT-based change program inside a large public infrastructure agency.
And that project was itself a hybrid, right? Mixing temporary and permanent staff.
It was. And within that program, two segmented institutional logics started competing. A project organizing logic, which valued flexibility and deadlines, and an asset management logic, which valued long-term reliability and standardization.
The project became the battleground.
It did. Mm-hmm. And that competition forced new practices to emerge, new forms, new ways of talking, new metrics. So by using PDI, a top-down theory, the scholars were able to capture this microprocess of institutional change through the lens of temporary organizing.
Yeah.
And that provides huge value back to organizational theory.
That's a perfect illustration of the top-down utility, borrowing a powerful lens to deeply analyze what we're seeing in projects. Okay, so now let's pivot. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Bottom-up theorizing.
Right.
And this approach starts not with a theory, but with a massive real-world phenomenon. And in this case, the phenomenon is crisis. We know that temporary organizing is crucial in crisis management, coordinating efforts before, during, and after an emergency. And previous research on these extreme environments often found that, you know, informal emergent structures were way more effective than static formal ones.
Which just makes intuitive sense.
It does, but those past studies had a key limitation.
They did. They usually only looked at the initial response stage, the first few weeks after a disaster hits. And they tended to assume that these temporary structures were static and really short-lived.
They were designed to put out the fire, then just dissolve.
Exactly. But now, this new bottom-up research is giving us completely novel insights that challenge that assumption. And these insights have implications for all of organizational studies.
Okay, so what's the study?
I'm thinking of a study that looked at three temporary organizations responding to the COVID-19 crisis in the Netherlands. It was a qualitative longitudinal approach, which is key. They follow them over time.
And that's crucial work, isn't it? Because a pandemic is not a flash flood. It's a slow, grinding emergency. So what did they find? How did these temporary organizations evolve when they couldn't just pack up and go home?
Well, they uncovered this three-stage evolutionary process. It started with, one, the identification of operational voids, seeing where the existing structures were failing.
Right.
Then came two, the dynamics of emergent organizing, all the scrambling and building. And then finally, three, solidification. The structures started to become fixed.
Yeah.
And here is the absolute aha moment, the finding that really challenges general organization studies. They found that these organizations developed new tasks, new connections, new organizational structures continually over time.
So they were flexible?
They showed flexibility, yes. But the real punchline is this. Intended temporariness does not equal realized termination.
Wow. Okay, say that again.
Intended temporariness does not equal realized termination.
They were supposed to dissolve, but they mutated and they stuck around. That sounds incredibly familiar to anyone who watched temporary agencies get set up during the 2008 financial crisis or the pandemic.
Precisely. They started developing structures, routines, relationships that made them more and more stable. They even extended their own existence far beyond what was originally envisioned. This bottom-up research gives us this novel insight that temporariness is not a fixed variable. It can erode.
What are the practical stakes of that finding? I mean, if these temporary crisis organizations stabilize unintentionally, what does that mean for how governments or nonprofits plan for crisis response?
It means you have to fundamentally change how you budget, how you handle HR. If you budget based on intended short-term costs, but the organization solidifies and lasts for 5 years.
You've created a monster.
You've created a structure with mission creep, not enough resources, and poor accountability, all because everyone expected it to just disappear.
Yeah.
It shows us that organizational closure, that transition phase, it's not a guarantee just because it was written on the project charter.
And that has huge implications for dealing with other long-lasting, turbulent situations. Things like climate change or geopolitical tension.
Absolutely.
So what does this all mean for our mission? We've seen the power of the top-down approach using a theory like PDI to analyze how practices shape institutions within projects.
And we've seen the power of the bottom-up approach, studying the phenomenon of crisis to generate this totally new field-defining insight that intended temporariness is often a myth.
And that synthesis, that's the key to the true cross-fertilization.
It is. By framing temporary organizing as this dynamic, processual, practice-based phenomenon, we create common intellectual ground.
Yeah.
And that's valuable to scholars in so many disciplines.
And this applies to so many areas beyond just traditional management, right? You could apply this framing to innovation studies, looking at projects in innovation contexts.
Or to the study of digital transformation, which has so much in common with information systems research.
Even entirely new forms of organizing, like sustainability pilots, or looking at the complex ways different temporary organizations respond to a changing climate, all of them could benefit from this dual approach.
And that brings us right back to that crucial bottom-up finding. Intended temporariness does not equal realized termination. If these temporary organizations, born of necessity and defined by their fixed endpoint, frequently develop these unintended structures that make them last longer.
Then we're left with a really provocative thought for you to consider.
If temporariness itself is so unstable, what does this imply for how we define, plan, and manage our so-called permanent organizations that are constantly facing turbulence, crisis, and continuous unexpected change?